It is late morning of the following day. Joy is on the living room couch and has been all morning, reading Wolf Hall or going over notes for Food City, the epic book on the history of New York food she is writing, when she complains of her leg feeling odd and twitchy, and I notice that her face is flushed. I put my hand against her cheek. She feels warm. I ask her if she thinks she has a fever, and she says she isn't sure, but doesn't feel quite right. I suggest she call the doctor, and she does. She tells the nurse or receptionist her symptoms. Flushed face, possible fever, odd twitchy feeling in her leg, and says that she's feeling congested, having some difficulty breathing. There is some conversation back and forth, no more than a couple of minutes, if that. When she hangs up, she says she's been told to wait until her follow-up appointment on Tuesday. It is a Friday in mid-August. That's a long time to wait, I say, and ask again if she feels okay. She says not really, but the doctor's office does not appear to be worried, so she isn't either. No one wants to be bothered on a summer weekend, I say. I have a few errands to run, some food, computer paper, more ice for the machine. I tell Joy I'll be back in an hour, and I am. Joy is still on the couch, reading. I refill the ice machine. Her leg, she says, is feeling very twitchy. I suggest we take the ice pack off and have a look, but she doesn't think it's a good idea. Do we talk about anything else? Dinner, I think, but I can't remember. After more than 40 years of marriage, we communicate without a lot of talk. When we were first together, we talked nonstop. We'd met as undergrad art students at Boston University. I was a painting major. Joy, the more practical one, studying art education. A blind date neither one of us wanted. A friend of hers knew a friend of mine. I remember going to pick her up at her dorm, watching her come out of the elevator and walk toward me in her beige mini jumper, dark tights that showed off her legs, waist-long auburn hair, adorable pug nose and freckles. Irish, I thought, though it turned out she was Jewish. On the MTA trolley, we talked easily, and she smiled a lot, and I noticed her perfect teeth, braces, I later learned, then her beautiful hands, long tapered fingers and surprisingly long nails, unlike other art school girls whose nails were usually cut short and crusted with paint, like mine. I'm in my studio at the back of the loft, too far away to hear if Joy calls. Down a long hallway, past the kitchen, two bedrooms, two bathrooms, and Joy's office. Plus, my studio walls are soundproof. But she has her cell phone in case she needs me, and I can be by her side in less than a minute. In the studio, I get to work on a book I've been trying to finish, about a cop who loses his family in a random shooting. A novel with a loose association to crime and punishment, which I had recently reread and had become obsessed with. My novel was unresolved, though Joy, always my first and best reader, liked it and encouraged me to keep going. I remember thinking that I had gotten something wrong, something very basic to the story, that the villain, a hitman at the end of his days, should be the stand-in for Raskolnikov, not my hero cop, which is the way I had written it. It seemed like a revelation, and I made notes on how I might rewrite it. Normally, Joy would be right next door in her office, also soundproof, though we shared a wall. We had been working at home together for the past decade. Though there were times I found the togetherness a bit much, there was comfort in it too, like having an artist's colony of two. In grandiose moments, I could imagine we were Dashiell Hammett and Lillian Hellman, or Joan Didion and John Gregory Dunn. My Raskolnikov notes did not take long. I couldn't have been in my studio for more than a half hour before going back to check on Joy, though she had not called. Halfway down the hall, I see her face is pale, and she's reaching out to me. In my head, I hear her say, "Where have you been?" But I don't think she says anything. Her ability to speak already reduced to a croak, her eyes wide with a look I've never seen before. Something between terror and pleading. I rush to her side and get my arms around her. She's gasping for breath, and I tell her to breathe slowly as I fumble with my cell phone, or was it hers? From the time I speak to the 911 operator until the firemen and paramedics arrive seems like hours, though it's only a matter of minutes. The whole time, I'm cradling Joy in my arms, telling her to breathe slowly, her eyes open wide, and she grips my hand tightly as I repeat, "Hold on."